Hi, I'm Chastity Blackwell. That's my Twitter handle, which is a Shadowrun reference, which has become problematic in the last couple of years. But yeah, so I'm here to talk about how to succeed in ops without really trying. The alternate title was Flailing Wildly at Feelings of Inadequacy. A fair warning, there may actually be trying involved, and success is not guaranteed, so it may be slightly misleading. Before I get started, I need to give a little spiel for my employer, since they paid for me to come here. If you don't know what Yelp is, we're a company dedicated to helping people connect with great local businesses in a variety of ways. I suspect most people in here are aware of who we are and what we do, but if you want to learn more, we're hiring, and I'm more than happy to talk about it, although I've only been there for 5 months, and I still feel a little... still getting my sea legs, so to speak. So a little bit about me. I've been a sysadmin for 18 years. I have no CS degree. I have a degree in history and creative writing. That's exactly as useful as you think it is. I got a job at the university in 1999, mostly because everybody else who was more qualified had left for Silicon Valley. And this talk sort of originated from a conversation, or many conversations I had with a friend. She'd had a series of really frustrating jobs in bad environments, and she was looking for a new job, and I encouraged her to apply at a bunch of companies that were well-regarded in the app space. And she kept telling me, I'm not qualified, I don't know anything, they aren't going to hire me, why should I bother trying to apply at this place and go through that pain and suffering for nothing? I managed to convince her otherwise, and now she's actually working for one of those companies. So that worked out pretty well. Ironically, I had to go through the exact same thought process when I left my previous company to come work for Yelp. This talk helped me convince myself that I'm not a complete fraud. So I want to start off talking a little bit about some myths. And a lot of these were things that my friend told me when she was looking for her new position. And I've seen similar things from people who are either new to the field or have been in one place for a long time and feel kind of out of the loop. Or they just don't, they're not dealing with the things that everybody else is talking about. And, you know, I see this stuff either on forums or mailing lists or hear it from people in meetups and conversation or in conventions. And I think we're our own worst enemy sometimes when it comes to our confidence. So the first myth is, I'm just a sysadministrator. I'm not a SRE or a DevOps engineer or production engineer or whatever all that other stuff is that you see in job postings. And one of the most infuriating to me is a no-ops engineer. Anyway, so when I started working on this talk, I was like, all right, let me see what a no-ops engineer actually has. So this is all taken from job postings for a no-ops engineer. And, you know, configuration management, incident response, shell scripting, this stuff sounds an awful lot like what system administration has been, at least for me, for a good long time. I don't think it's super new to anybody. I think no-ops actually might be falling out of favor because I went back when I was doing my final revisions to the talk, and all of those jobs had changed to DevOps engineer or production engineer or something else. So at least that might be going away. So the reality is most of those new job titles are things that people who are system administrators have been doing for years. the ecosystem is a lot more complex, and there's a lot more applications involved in a lot of places. There's a lot more permutations that are there, but the actual technical tasks that most of us are doing aren't that different from what people are doing 10 years ago. They're just different in scale or in in what specifics that they're involving. DevOps is not a job title, as I'm sure a lot of different talks are going to say this week. I've been a research programmer who did very little research and almost no programming, a system administrator, a manager of a DevOps group, and now I'm an SRE. But the technical skills I've been using have just basically been evolutions of everything I've been working on for who knows how long. Too long now. Here's the next thing that my friend told me. Everybody is looking for a coder. I don't code. And this is really frustrating because on the one hand, I can certainly understand the sentiment. I'm not, like, I dropped CS after one bad semester. I've never been a software engineer, and for a long time, every web page I had looked like it was from 1994. On the other hand, I bet you've written something like this, or like this, or like this. And the reality is, all of that is code. The best sysadmins are lazy sysadmins, is an adage that goes back at least a decade, if not more. And I don't know too many sysadmins, even back in 1999 when I started, that didn't write shell scripts or Perl scripts or something to automate tedious tasks. If you use Puppet or Chef to manage your infrastructure, there's a reason they call that infrastructure as code. If you wrote a crappy PHP web page to create user accounts or provision a new virtual server, congratulations, that's also code. I think now there's a lot more focus on that, and it's specifically called out, but it's not a foreign concept to most of the people in this room, and there's plenty of cutting-edge companies that are held together with someone's janky shell script. What you might not know is formal software development methodologies, or how to get the most out of an IDE, or what method of doing something is most efficient, or the best way to test your code, or how your code will necessarily perform in a particular environment. But that's all stuff you can learn, either from being in an environment where people are already doing that stuff, and they're more than willing to help you, hopefully, or by reading and practicing on your own, or a mix of the two, hopefully. It's not an unobtainable magic that you couldn't possibly hope to figure out. So resist the temptation to make it sound that way to yourself. All right. How about, what's going on here? Okay, there we go. So here's another thing I've heard. I run some web servers and a MySQL database for a small company. I can't compete with somebody who's been working for Google or Facebook. And to be fair, the problems that people at Google and Facebook are solving are crazy. They're handling tens of thousands of hits per second. They've got infrastructure scattered worldwide. They've got a huge ecosystem of applications. They're pushing new code all the time. If you work at a 30-person company that makes signs, that's a little different from what you're dealing with on a daily basis, and it's hard. And it's hard to understand how what you do possibly could compare. But the reality is, most people don't work for Google or Facebook, and most companies aren't doing things at the scale that Google and Facebook are doing. There's millions of people working in technology, and most people work for smaller companies. When I worked at the university, I wasn't dealing with thousands of computers or millions of users, but I was still taking care of infrastructure that was critical to the university's mission. And when our online courseware went down for 3 days because of a bad SQL query, it was a big deal. It was in the newspaper. I spent a lot of time at work during those 3 days. And then no matter the size of your business or your organization, you still got to think about at least some of the same problems that Google and Facebook are looking at. How can you scale? How can I make sure the website is up and working right? How can I get us the best bang for the buck? And there's a lot of advantages to working for a small company, too. There was a conversation around when the SRE book from Google and O'Reilly came out, where a lot of people thought it sounded like Google did not realize that other people were also doing the same things they were doing. And that's not necessarily an indictment of Google. If you're in a giant company with thousands of employees and you're convinced you're doing things no one else can do, and you may be right, you can miss what other people are doing. I don't think everybody at Facebook or Google is like this, but it's easier to fall into that trap when most of the people you know and come into contact on a daily basis with all work for the same company. When you're working in a smaller company, you also get exposure to lots of different parts of the application stack. If you're the only IT person at a company, you're probably dealing with their networking gear, their web servers, their databases, their phone systems, maybe their physical security. At a bigger company, like Yelp, chances are you're pretty hyper-focused on one thing. You work on load balancers. Or databases, or DNS, or Apache, and probably not all of it, especially not at the same time. You might move between teams or between projects, but you're going to get less exposure to the overall whole, even if you go out of your way to try and get that exposure. And being able to see that wider view is a really important skill in operations, especially when it comes to troubleshooting. You also get to interact with developers and users every day at a smaller company. You get more immediate personal feedback, and you can make a bigger impact, good or bad, to the business. I've been dealing with this change a lot myself since coming to Yelp. I moved from a company where I was in a sort of self-contained product where I was one of half a dozen operations engineers. Now I work at Yelp. We have an entire floor that's dedicated to the infrastructure group. And I'm working with, you know, probably a dozen people at least on a daily basis, just in my operations group. So here's another thing my friend told me, which is also frustrating. I can't apply for a job there. This famous person works there. Why would they hire me? And it's probably the most frustrating because having someone who's really good at what they do working somewhere is a reason you should want to work there, not a reason you shouldn't. Most people in any company of any size are not going to be rock stars. Even the people you think are geniuses are usually just people who are pretty good at what they do and decided to try and help other people learn from their experience. And that's how they became known. Most of the people working at Menlo Park were not Thomas Edison. Most of the people working at Google are not Vint Cerf. I guarantee that most companies are not looking to hire someone to come in as an SRE and revamp their entire infrastructure. They're looking for somebody who can get stuff done, who can make things work and work well with other people. And if you can go somewhere where you can learn from somebody who's really well known in the field, like that's a great opportunity for you. Not just from a, you can learn a lot, but they probably have a much wider network of people they know that you can actually glom onto. So don't let that dissuade you from applying for a job with someone you hold in high regard. And the last myth I want to address is one that I think is really damaging. I think there's much more awareness of this than there was a couple of years ago. But the belief that you have to spend so much time working or just trying to keep up with the field that you flame out and you just can't handle it. I had my friend actually said it feels like I have to do so much extra work on top of my job that I don't feel like I'm cut out for this at all. And I think a lot of the people that are in that situation should actually really be looking for a better working environment, because you shouldn't have to sacrifice your life or your sanity just to keep up. No one can know everything, and anyone who expects you to is not being realistic. The best engineers maintain a work-life balance, and the best companies will do all they can to make sure that you can maintain that. If you're burning the candle at both ends, you're in a bad spot, whether it's self-imposed pressure or pressure from your boss. And you should do something to change that. If you don't feel like you have time just between work and your other obligations to keep up, there's ways to do that that won't devour all your free time, and I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. The one last thing I want to say is, if you're looking for a job and you're intimidated or you're not sure if you should apply, the worst thing that can happen is they say, "We don't want to hire you," in which case you're in the exact same situation you're in now. So just go ahead and apply, and if you don't get it, you don't get it. So let's assume by some miracle I've managed to convince you that we're not all as bad off as we think we are. Now what do you do? Our field is constantly in motion, and it's hard to feel like you're not always playing catch up. How do you ensure that you're doing good work and positioning yourself in a good way for the future, too, without, you know, burning yourself out? So before I get started, I want to talk a little bit about what I went through when I moved from Champaign, Illinois to San Francisco, which, so here's an example. The one on the left is 10 minutes from my office in Champaign, which is a cornfield in the middle of the university campus. And 10 minutes away from my office now is the Transamerica Pyramid. So it's a little different. I moved from a college town of about 150,000 people, of which 40,000 were students, surrounded by cornfields, to a sprawling metroplex halfway across the country. I moved from a team with 6 to 7 pure sysadmins, with an entire other networking group, a DBA group, service managers, to a startup where I was one of 5 operations people doing all production operations. The pace of change increased by orders of magnitude because business moves a little faster than academia, and the costs of doing business, especially incidents, were much more visible. Before I'd moved to California, I fell prey to most of those same myths that I talked about at the beginning. I even told the director that hired me that I didn't really think that I was qualified for that position during the phone interview. So the first few weeks and months at that job were a little overwhelming. You know, working at a large organization, I hadn't really needed to think too hard about the lower level details of virtualization or networking. Somebody else was taking care of that. And now I was dealing with them every day. I managed to survive largely thanks to being on a good team with a manager who took the time to help me understand what was going on and by managing to pick my battles. And when I became a manager, and recently when I changed jobs to go work at Yelp, I went through that same sort of learning process. My experience and learning from the experiences of others, especially now that I'm in a place where I meet a lot more people doing what I'm doing, has really helped me fight off the worst feelings of inadequacy, mostly. So I think one of the most important things to maintaining my sanity during these transitions has been to embrace the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid, if you aren't aware, which isn't always easy. Sometimes when you read something like the Google SRE book or you read blog posts from Netflix about how they can just shut down parts of their infrastructure on purpose and everything works fine, or you come to a conference and everybody's saying how great everything is to run on Docker, so good, you can start to feel like you're really far behind and now you've got to do everything to try and catch up. The problem is you're not comparing your infrastructure and your personal development to the average company or the average person, but you're comparing it to cutting-edge infrastructure and leaders in their field, which is great to learn how to improve, but It's not great for your stress level. So take a deep breath and step back. Resist the temptation to go into that death spiral. You're not going to be able to fix everything right away, either with your infrastructure or with yourself. And there's only so much you can learn in so much time and only so much you can do at your company. Those companies doing all that cutting edge stuff, they may have more people doing operations than your company has employees. That person talking about how Docker works great for them, that might be great if you're starting from scratch. But if you have five-year-old legacy applications and only two operations engineers, that isn't necessarily going to work out as well as you hope. And applying the same principles to yourself, you can't learn five new languages in a week, especially if you want to have a life. So it's okay to be boring. Charity Majors has a talk from SREcon 16 that you should watch about this and making technical decisions. But the upshot is boring technologies have large communities for support, large pools of people that can be hired with experience in it, and they have well-known failure modes. Nobody uses Nagios because it's the best monitoring tool ever devised. It's used because it works, because there's tons of plugins, and it's really easy to get up and running. It's okay to choose something new, but realize what you're getting yourself into. Make sure it makes sense. Make sure that you can keep up with the cost in brain power and technical debt you're likely to incur, and then make the decision. And in terms of personal development, the same thing sort of applies. You don't need to chase the new hotness. If Bash and Python serve your needs and you know your way around with them, don't feel like you have to learn something else right away just because it's what the cool kids are doing. That doesn't mean learning something new isn't worthwhile, but it's better to focus on the things you already know well and can do better and that you're using regularly than trying to jump into something new and not really being able to use it right. I tried learning Python 3 times, and it hadn't stuck until I came to Yelp, where it's all very Python-y, and now I'm actually finally getting it because I'm using it every day as opposed to it was just something I was doing on the side. And if you have free time, or if you think something new will solve a problem that you've got, then you can cast your net further afield, but be wary of spreading yourself too thin. And remember that you can fix things later if you have to. An 80% solution that you can do right now or in a couple of days is way better than a 99% solution that probably will never materialize. Don't pick months deliberating over what configuration management you want to put in place if you don't have configuration management. Just put in something. Don't worry about writing a tool in Python or Go. If it works, pick one and go with it. The worst case is you'll have to go back and fix it later, which may happen, but it's better than not having anything at all. So look at moving the ball forward as much as possible in the near term instead of hemming and hawing about what you would do in a perfect world. I had the unfortunate experience of leading projects as a manager where I was trying to go for a silver bullet and we couldn't get anywhere. And if I had aimed lower, it might have taken longer to actually get to the promised land. But we'd start seeing an incremental payoff sooner rather than later, I think. And so learn from my mistakes and don't do that. So if you can't do everything at once, what you need to do is find a focus, something that you're good at. Hiring managers talk about looking for a T-shaped engineer, someone with deep knowledge on one or two subjects and a broad range of knowledge on a bunch of other stuff. Our field is so diverse, no one, especially these days, is going to expect you to know everything. Find something you're interested in, whether that's databases or configuration management or networking or performance tuning, and focus on that. It doesn't even necessarily need to be something technical. As someone who is not the most technical person, I love postmortems and incident analysis. Maybe you're super into project management. If you can find something that really interests you and you can learn a lot about and use in your daily job, that's great. But most importantly, find a way to share that knowledge with other people on your team and in the industry or in the company. At Yelp, my most rewarding contribution so far has been in discussions with people about our postmortem process. Yelp had one for a long time, but it just sort of evolved organically. Someone thought it was a good idea at some point, and then everybody just sort of followed their lead. There'd never really been an effort to go back and evaluate, you know, is this doing what we expect it to? How can we do this better in a like real studied way? Coming in as someone new with a strong interest in the topic, I managed to have a number of really good conversations with senior engineers. And we ended up making some additions to our postmortem documentation. We're thinking about changing the process we use. And I managed to highlight a lot of articles, talks, and other sources of knowledge on the subject that they weren't aware of. You can do the same thing, even if you're not necessarily more knowledgeable on the topic than somebody else. You may have different experiences or points of view that can contribute to improvements. Just make sure you're trying to contribute to improvements, not just trying to rain on their parade. That's not going to end well. You know, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be a rock star. You don't have to spend all weekend elbow deep in code. And it's okay if you inwardly wince at your puppet modules. You don't have to be better than everybody else. You can just be better than most. And I guarantee if you actually care about what you're doing, and if you know you could be better, and you're here at a conference trying to be better, that's probably a good sign you're already halfway there. The other thing you can do to make yourself a valuable employee is learn the business that you're in. I see way too many people who make the mistake of thinking that what their company does doesn't really matter to them. You know, one web server is the same as any other. And this type of thinking seems most prevalent in shops that are established businesses or where the DevOps movement is still viewed with a bit of suspicion. You can see a lot of shades of the old, well, maybe not so old, dev versus ops mentality after this week in Twitter, but also like ops versus sales or ops versus accounting or ops versus any part of the business that isn't directly concerned with the technology itself. And this can be compounded by folks elsewhere in the business who see ops as just a cost center, which perpetuates a bad feedback loop. But the truth is, you can't make a good technical decision, especially the higher a level you go, without knowing the business. If your business is latency sensitive, that's going to play into your decision of whether you want to use AWS or bare metal. If you're designing your infrastructure to be capable of 6 nines when you only need 2, you're wasting a lot of money. And most importantly, if you can't make a good business argument for stuff you want to do, like cleaning up technical debt, you're never going to get the time or resources to actually do any of it. It's especially important for managers and technical leads to be able to make these sorts of decisions and arguments. But even if you want to be a good individual contributor, that's something that you should be thinking about. Running computers and writing code for most of us is not our employer's goal. In my case right now, it's connecting people with local businesses and selling ads. When I was at the university, it was helping people get an education. If you run Ford's website, your business is building and selling cars, not writing software. So, and more generally, just don't live in a bubble. It's going to be hard to do that and succeed, whether inside your company or in the industry. Talk to other people in your company to find out what they're doing and how you can help them succeed, and you'll find they're a lot more willing to help you or come to you with a question early on, which can really save you time than if they come back to you 6 months later when they're ready to shove something in production and you've got to fit a square peg into a round hole. And that's not just restricted to engineering. If you talk to customer support or sales or business development, they can all provide interesting insights into how things really work and how you can improve things for them, too. If you can make it easier to onboard customers with a simple web form, or make it easier for customer support to fix people's problems by improving error pages, that can be a big win for the company that you might not normally see. Outside of your job, build up relationships with other people in the operations community. If you're here at Lisa, which you are, you're already doing this at least already. The hallway track here is a great way to meet people to swap stories with and learn from. You know, keep in touch with former coworkers you like and respect, and that's more than just adding them on LinkedIn. You know, have lunch with them every once in a while. I just had lunch with one of the developers I used to work with at the company before I was at Yelp. Go to local meetups and conferences like DevOps Days. They're great ways to meet people in your area who share your problems and can offer advice. And there's DevOps Days all over. Like, there's DevOps Days Boise this year, which surprised me. And when the time comes that you want to look for a new job, these are great resources you can tap into. And it's also a great way to realize you're not as bad off as you think, or at least that everybody's in the same boat. So the other thing I want to say about that is don't be afraid to ask questions. No one's going to think less of you if you do. There's a lot of resources you can use to find answers, even if your friends and coworkers are stumped. I had a question recently about something I was working on for a project at work about improving our incident response. And I asked on the HangOps Slack in the incident response channel and got an answer from John Allspaugh. And it kicked off a discussion that I think made me think about the problem in a totally different way than I had been. I've gotten answers to Prometheus questions from the Prometheus maintainers on Freenode, and I've helped people debug problems just by asking questions about things I didn't understand. Asking questions is good, so be curious. And here's some great places to look for the answers to your questions. The HangOps Slack is a great one. I found it really useful since it sort of grew in the last year and a half. Freenode is one that's been around for ages, and most of the open source projects have an IRC channel there, I think. And if you don't know what Stack Overflow is, I'm sure someone here would be more than happy to tell you all about that. I think some people have started to neglect mailing lists as a resource. I think partially people just don't want to deal with a ton of spam. But in the past, at least when I've had a big project, I've joined a mailing list for whatever it involved, like OpenLDAP and our syslog. And I've asked my questions, and even just the incidental conversation from other discussions has been really helpful to me to understand how that stuff worked. There's also Twitter, which can be great for short questions, but you need to be a little wary of asking any one person specifically unless you have a pretty good relationship with them already. Nobody wants to be doing your job for you. But it can also be great for getting a wide range of opinion if you have a wide network. So that plays into why that's important, too. So no matter how you're asking questions, though, make sure you're being respectful of everyone's time. So do your due diligence to at least try and solve the problem on your own. When you're asking questions, be polite and provide plenty of context so that you're not asking someone to basically build the world for you. I also think one of the helpful things I've done is build a library of resources, which is, you know, things I can read when I'm bored or stuck on the train, or I've got 15 or 20 minutes between meetings and I just want to fill my time with something. And if you can spend an hour or two a week just reading things like SRE Weekly or, you know, the wonderful Yelp engineering blog, or Etsy's Code is Craft blog, things like that, you'll learn new things and at least be vaguely aware of what's going on in the world outside. Podcasts like Arrested DevOps can be great if you've got a long commute. You can just put it on and listen to it. A little time investment can really pay off in learning new things, or even just hearing about other people's struggles and knowing you're not alone. The important thing is this is something you can do when you have free time and you don't want to take it up with something else. It shouldn't be something that you feel like you have to do all the time in all your free time. And that leads into protecting yourself from burnout, because if you are spending all your free time doing work or things for work, it will be very bad. As someone who got way too close to the edge herself over the last year, if you let yourself run at the red line too long, it's not going to be any good for anyone. Research shows over and over again that working more than 40 or 50 hours a week actually ends up being seriously counterproductive. So as much as you can, I encourage you to leave work at work. Don't read your work email on weekends. Turn off Slack notifications and spend time with friends and family. I also think you need to take your vacation. And if you have unlimited vacation, well, probably take at least some of it. And don't just take like a Friday here or there. I did that for a long time, and it really doesn't give you a chance to unplug. You really need like a week or two where you can just get some critical distance and not think about work. And burnout is a really bad problem in this industry, so I'd rather not anyone in this room became a statistic. So to sum up, don't fall prey to the myths we tell ourselves about the industry and our experience. Don't feel like you have to be the best or you're a failure. It's okay to just be pretty good at something if you're curious and passionate about it. Don't be an island. Reach out to others within your company and your community and protect yourself from burnout, either self-imposed or otherwise. So here's some references. So these will be in the slides so people can go. But I really recommend Charity's talk especially. And here are some lovely social networking things that my company's PR people said you should really check out. So that's it for me. I guess there's a couple minutes for questions. So if you have questions, feel free. Or if that was the most enlightening thing ever and you have no questions, then that's also just fine.
So apropos of your original part of your discussion and when people are looking for jobs, one of the things that I've noted, I've been involved in my organization's hiring processes for way too long now, and our HR people have certain bits of boilerplate requirements that they insist on pasting into every position opening. And a lot of times, those don't reflect what the people who are actually doing the hiring are actually looking for. So, you know, it's very important sometimes to just ignore what the actual requirements say and try to get a feel from the organization that's actually doing the employing. What do they really want? Because sometimes, you know, it's like all of our job application, all of our job postings always say, ooh, you know, must have bachelor's degree in computer science. Or it's like, no, we haven't hired someone with a bachelor's degree in computer science in 5 years, because that's just not actually the requirement that we have in our organization. But that's what the HR people like insist on putting in there to make the, you know, for their internal systems to make the job posting actually be worth, in terms of salary offers, what, you know, what they, you know, what we need to be able to get talented people into the company or into the university.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you work at a university? Because that sounds extremely familiar. But yeah, that's definitely true. I know, like, when I worked at the university, basically they would not hire anybody without a bachelor's degree because it was a university. So it was a nice self-perpetuating thing. But yeah, and I think one of the things I've done when, like last year when I was a manager, I went back and I revised our job description. And I think if you don't already do that on a regular basis and you're a manager, you should probably do that. And if you're an independent contributor and you see a job posting for someone else in your group and it doesn't seem to match what you're actually looking for, you should tell someone about that. Like, you may not be able to make that change if it's a bureaucratic thing. Like, the university just has special university problems. But especially in other companies, like, that's something that you can change and fix, and not sitting there and going, well, that's just the, like, you want to hire the people that will do the things for you that you need to do, and not people that fulfill some arbitrary set of criteria that are not related to what you need.
I want to add two things to that. One is that I've seen studies saying that men will often apply to a job when they have at least half the requirements, and women will often wait, will often say, no, I can't do this, if they don't have all the requirements. And a lot of times it's just a wish list. You have to find out what they really need someone to do. And the flip side of that is, if they really need somebody to do all those things, it may be that they are looking for a unicorn, or they have combined three positions into one and you don't want that job. So find out what they really need. There's also a thing that several people have things up on the web that will run your job ad through a sexism filter to see.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one of the things I did when I revised that as a manager. As that was kind of out of the scope for this talk, but it's definitely something to definitely think about when you're doing that stuff.
I think it's, as you said, it's easy to come to Lisa and go, like, oh my God, I'm not totally DevOpsing. I can't possibly do this. But most places are somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I really wish someone had given me this talk 5 years ago.
I wish I had gotten this about 20 years ago, you're not alone.
But on a serious note, I do meet the occasional person who works in systems administration who literally doesn't code. You know, they're a Windows domain administrator or they're a storage admin. And do you think there is a future for people who literally don't code?
Well, I don't think they're going to disappear, but I think it's probably better for your career if you learn that. Like, there are certain things that you're, like, even 20 years ago, I think if you had refused to do any shell scripting or any of that, I know the Windows world is a little different, and I don't have much experience with that, so I don't want to speak to that. But I know even if you know, 20 years ago, I had walked in that job and refused to do any shell scripting, I would not have gone far, and I probably would have just gotten really tired of doing a ton of manual labor for no real good use. So I don't know that that's a great thing for your career. Really, if you're working in this industry, you should probably at least understand the concepts that go into programming, because that's going to be how you help troubleshoot things, like understanding, this exceeded the MTU or something, and that caused a weird networking problem, is stuff I've run into, and I only know that because of either, you know, reading about how things work and stuff like that. And that's basically a lot of what this job comes down to, is understanding how things work. And being able to program is, or at least, you know, some sort of, Now I'm doing it to myself. But being able to program is one of the ways to get that knowledge of how things work. Like, what are the failure cases for this? Or you know, this way of doing that. Okay. Oh, okay.
I thought it was interesting when you mentioned the T-shaped engineer. I recently moved from a small company where I, as you described, I had to do almost everything. You know, lots of I was shallow in many, many disciplines because there was no one else to do those things. And looking for a job at a bigger company, it was kind of scary reading the job ads because they wanted people who were deep. And because, you know, bigger companies, they build teams that are specialized, they're silos. They don't want somebody who can fix both the network and the computer and the and like carpentry. and so forth. They want someone just who understands the network only or the computer only, et cetera.
Well, but I don't think knowing that extra stuff is ever going to be a bad thing. And sure. In a job interview, it can be really good to say, you know, I've never gone deep on this, but on the other hand, I figured out how to jury rig X, Y, and Z because my boss would not spend any money on anything. You know, that you can solve those problems is good for you. Like that reflects well on you, and that's something that they'll go, that people can say, well, you may not know that right now, but if we throw a problem at you, you are capable of going deep on that and figuring out why it's broken and finding a solution. And that's really how you build that deep knowledge. Nobody gets it because it magically happens, or you read it in a book usually. Like, the stuff that really sticks with you is stuff that you have bled over because some horrible problem was killing you and you just had to make it stop. I think it can look... You may have to go in as a more junior person, like, but any good company will not see a bright, that you know more stuff as a bad thing. So don't feel that way.
One thing I was going to say, for some of the positions we've had open in the recent last couple of years, you know, we've done the list everything possible just to try to get people to, who are doing searches, to find things. And for both the jobs we've had, you know, we were looking for someone senior level. We never could really find someone who fit all of our things, but we found some candidates who had applied who were definitely more junior, but we thought had much more potential. So in both those cases, we just the way the lab works, we had to cancel that posting, but then we were able to repost at the lower grade and basically hire them in right there. So if you're not going to be hired, or if you're see a job that you're interested in and it's at a higher grade than you are, I'd say, you know, try anyway, because if nothing else, we can maybe bump it down to a junior grade if we think you're who we want.
When we were doing hiring and I was a manager, if we had somebody come in and interview and we didn't think they were right for this position, we would at least keep them in mind for later. So, yeah, it's not bad. And just interviewing can get your foot in the door, even if you don't get that job. So that's it. All right. Thank you.